From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We start this week with a quick tour of recent science headlines, compliments of our friends at the journal Nature. With me this time around is podcast editor Benjamin Thompson. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Heather, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the James Webb Space Telescope. This is supposed to be the next generation to take the place of Hubble. And as of last fall, it was actually set to launch this coming October 2018. But we've now seen a series of delays announced over the past 6 or so months, and they're now saying it won't launch until March of 2021. How much do we know about what the problems are that this telescope is facing?
It seems like there's just been a lot of issues behind the scenes, and this is a very, very complex telescope. And I think final stages of development have, well, stuff's gone a bit awry. I mean, for example, some screws came loose when they were trying to sort of put everything together, and two of these screws have since never been found, and some solvents have been used, the wrong solvents have been used to clean some valves, and things have been leaking. So I think it's a lot of little things at the moment that are equaling one very big problem.
Loose screws and missing screws do not sound like a good thing on a spacecraft for sure. But I mean, when the Hubble launched, it's easy to forget because it's done so much great work and gone so far beyond life expectancy. But I mean, it launched with a manufacturing defect in its primary mirror. The pictures were actually unusable. They were so blurry and they had to repair it in space. So how different or unexpected are these problems that the James Webb telescope is facing?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I think astronauts were able to give the Hubble maybe a pair of glasses almost to sort of correct its vision. But what's happening here with the James Webb Space Telescope is, well, when it actually goes out into outer space, it needs to kind of unfurl like a flower, right? And everything needs to work well because unlike Hubble, which was, you know, relatively close to Earth in a sort of low Earth orbit, this one is going to be 1.5 million kilometers away. So once it's out there, it's not coming back. And we're going to have a heck of a job there trying to go out and fix it if we have to.
And the other part of this story is that with each of these delays actually comes a price hike. I mean, the story that Nature had said $1 million a day. This could actually be affecting other science missions, affecting the bottom line of NASA.
And this is one of the issues sort of with this at the moment. So NASA estimates that the latest delay will add maybe $800 million to the telescope's costs, right?
Wow.
And that's on top of the $8 billion that Congress has already approved, which, I mean, these numbers are so big that I have trouble maybe comprehending them. But I think the issue here is obviously some of this money will come from sort of potential projects that the telescope is due to do in space, right? So that's where some of the shortfall is going to come from. But I think NASA needs to ask for some more money from Congress again. And obviously, that's always a tricky one, right?
Yes, absolutely. But not all astronomy is on hold. There was a mysterious object sighted last fall. It was zipping through our solar system at an angle that made it pretty clear that it had come from outside our solar system. And that was a first. But this object was also really mysterious. Nobody seemed to know what it was. Scientists actually checked to make sure it wasn't an alien spaceship. At this point, we seem to have a little bit more clarity. What was that object?
Yes, this is a Oumuamua, I believe. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly for your listeners.
You're doing better than I am.
Well, you're very kind. Message from afar arriving first in Hawaiian, I believe. So this object arrived towards the back end of last year, and it's come in from outside the solar system, and it's making its way through the heavens outside our solar system again. So it's just visiting, really. For a relatively short time, I suppose, researchers thought that this was an asteroid. But some new research that came out relatively recently suggests that actually it may be a comet.
And for those of us who have forgotten our high school astronomy, the difference between an asteroid and a comet is?
Well, now you're testing me. Well, what I will say is that a comet, the classic comet that you might draw when you're at school, is kind of a ball of rock with a tail coming out the other end, right? And in many cases, that tail is kind of water vapor and gas coming out from the rock, right? But Oumuamua is slightly different. People are suggesting that maybe it had a frozen heart, which I thought was a bit cold. But certainly it's a lump of rock with some ice in the center. And what's been going on is, as it's been sort of flying through the solar system, researchers noticed that it wasn't following the trajectory that you might expect, right? So closer inspection recently I mean, what they think is going on is that the sun has been heating up this kind of a frozen centre, and it's been letting off a very small amount of sort of gas, of you know, water vapour and what have you, and that's just nudging its path through the heavens.
All right, back to Earth. Honeybees, we all know, are amazing with geometry, with their honeycomb, but some new research looking at their math abilities, basically, has figured out that honeybees get the concept of zero. First of all, how do you test the mathematical abilities of a honeybee?
Right. Well, I think, you know, that's the $64,000 question. But I think before, I think it's important to say that there's not many animals that actually can recognize zero, right? Humans, we can, and I believe dolphins can. And from my research, I read that maybe one gray parrot is able to do so, right? So honeybees join a relatively kind of esteemed group of animals. but as to the how, right? I mean, the researchers, they kind of tempted some wild honeybees into their kind of sort of testing area, and they showed them these panels, these white panels, right? And these panels had different shapes on them, different dark shapes. In the first instance, racing from 2 to 5. So they had to do a bit of counting, right? And some were asked to identify the lowest and some the highest number of shapes. And they were given a little bit of sugar water. And then the researchers threw in a bit of a curveball and put in these blank white squares as well. And after a few days, the honeybees were able to see that the blank squares were different to the other squares and count that there was nothing there.
That's interesting, but why does it matter if bees understand zero?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair question, and I'm not entirely sure that the researchers themselves know just yet, right? I think they're not sure if the bees have identified it because they've been trained to identify it, or if this is some sort of innate skill that they just have, and, you know, that skill maybe would help them in sort of when they're foraging for flowers. So I think maybe more questions than answers in this story, but it's a neat start, right?
All right. An enormous study of 33,000 mother-baby pairs of humans here in China is releasing some of its first findings. First, what makes this particular study unique or important?
This is the Guangzhou cohort study, which are huge experiments that recruits babies and their mothers, and in this instance, their grandmothers as well, maternal grandmothers.
So what kinds of information are they releasing at this point?
Well, I mean, the study hasn't been going on very long, but the first few results have come out, and they're pretty interesting, right? I mean, the first one suggested that that burning incense, and this is something that happens a lot in southern China, so I'm led to believe, could increase the risk of hypertension in expectant mothers.
Hmm.
And another test has suggested that progesterone, which is used around the world to reduce the risk of preterm birth, was used too early for 40% of the women who are in this cohort study.
So pretty dramatic results that might affect prenatal care around the world.
I mean, yeah, I think that's what the researchers are saying. I think in this instance, it didn't reduce the chance of preterm birth, but maybe put the mothers at a higher risk of needing a C-section and potentially developing postpartum depression as well.
Wow. Well, as you said, there are other cohort studies like this, studies of mothers and babies where we follow them for a long period of time. Is there something that we can get from this particular study because it is so large, such large numbers of mothers and babies involved that we can't get from those other cohort studies?
I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. It is that size that's the key, right? I mean, they're hoping to get 50,000 baby mother sets by 2020, right, which is a huge number. And I think the larger the data set, you know, the more accurate you can make your measurements, your inferences and what have you.
That's Benjamin Thompson. He is podcast editor for Nature. Benjamin, thank you so much.
Not at all. Thanks for having me.